Welcome to the Baseball America Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk baseball.
Hi, everybody. John Manuel, J.J. Cooper, Mike Ladana. I thought we'd start 2017 Baseball America Podcast with a Dr. Nick reference. It just felt appropriate because we've only done three podcasts in the month of December. So I apologize for... I don't apologize for the podcast, actually. We had to do a prospect handbook. We had to cover the winter meetings. Those things took priority.
Especially, the prospect handbook is a massive... it takes a lot of time.
It's a product that we make that people pay for. And ultimately, that takes priority over a product that people don't pay for. So that's kind of how I prioritize that in my head. So it's a very busy month. Two issues of the magazine, Fantasy Magazine, Prospect Handbook. All out the door in that month of December. Also with the holiday and... the holiday season and the winter meeting. So we thank you for persevering with us through that month. I'm going to be around here sparsely the next couple of weeks, but JJ has promised that he's going to plow through these podcasts the next couple of weeks and get you caught up. And we are trying to get caught up, and that's why Mike Ladana is here. We're going to catch you up with the American League Central, finally finishing it. I'm sure Twins fans have been waiting with bated breath, Mike, since your chat, to talk more Twins with you. But they do get to talk more Twins today. As we wrap up the American League Central podcast, and a couple things stand out to us, I guess, Mike, and I know you can talk more to the Twins, but the rest of the American League Central, before the White Sox totally blew up their team, and they haven't totally blown it up yet. They're still in the process of
blowing up.
Yes. But this was a den of bad farm systems before. The White Sox before were bad. The Royals farm system is not a good farm system. It's a bottom five-ish farm system. Same thing with the Tigres. Same thing with the Tigers. I always forget one of the other teams. And the Twins and the Indians.
The Indians are a middle of the pack.
I think it's fair to say that outside of the reconstituted White Sox, the rest of these are bottom half farm systems. When you were writing the Twins, and last year you did Rockies, this year you did Twins. Mm-hmm. Did you feel as you were writing it, because last year's Rocky system was quite robust, did you sense as soon as you were doing the research, this system's not as good.
Like, yeah.
Was it obvious?
Yeah, there was definitely a stark contrast when I started trying to put together the top 10. Last year with the Rockies, it was trying to figure out who am I going to leave out of this top 10, whereas this year it's like, okay, is this guy really a top 10 kind of guy? You know, guys like, you know, Daniel Palka at the back end, you know, guys like that, for instance, no offense to him, but, you know, guys like that. And yeah, I mean, it was difficult.
Daniel just texted me, none taken.
part of the problem with them is just because, and we talked about this a little bit before we started here, was just that they graduated so much talent, and you know, Byron Buxton and Berrios and Kepler and all those kinds of guys who really sapped the top 10. So it was difficult for sure. I mean, you look at this top 10 and there's really not a can't miss kind of guy, you know, kind of a no doubt slam dunk. This guy's going to be a superstar really in this top 10.
It's a weird top 10 because Nick Gordon, I mean, for people who don't have it in front of them, Nick Gordon, Steven Gonsalves, Alex Kirilloff, this year's first round pick. That's your top three. Fernando Romero, Tyler J, Adalberto Mejia, 4, 5, and 6. Cole Stewart, Felix Jorge, Daniel Palka, Travis Blankenhorn, one of my favorite names in the whole book. He seems like he was destined to play for the Minnesota Vikings, not to mention the Twins. Travis Blankenhorn. I imagine that spread over like a number 56 jersey. Like he should be a right guard for a football team with that name. You could have shaken that list up really the first five guys, right? I mean, like Tyler J was the 6th overall pick. Cole Stewart was the 4th overall pick in a draft.
Yeah.
And to me, it's like that's where it starts, is that this franchise is still looking for pitching, Mike, and yet Gonsalves, Romero, Jay, Mejia, Stewart, Jorge, those guys all have hickeys, and they've been trying to find pitching, have they not?
And that's with Jay Oberios having graduated, but having more hickeys now than he had.
Jay Oberios being like, "Ooh, thank God for Dylan Overton's debut. Ooh, took me off the hook a little bit."
Yeah, I mean, all these guys, you know, as you said, they have their hickeys, they have their warts, and you know, you look at Tyler J. There's still people divided as far as what he's going to be. A lot of people that I talk to seem to think he's going to end up as a reliever.
You saw peak Tyler J. in 2015, didn't you?
I did. Yeah, I saw him pitch at Ohio State as a closer with Illinois, and he was up to 95, 96 with the nasty slider. And if you know, you put him in a short, you know, relief role in a high leverage situation, you know, I think he could thrive in that role as he did at Illinois. But
he had like some swagger too, like some aura, didn't he, as a closer?
Yeah,
as a small guy.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly some confidence and some presence to him out there on the mound. You know, the thing with him is is the stuff going to hold up over five or six, seven innings of a start? I mean, he has four pitches, but it doesn't sound like, at least from the people that I've talked to, that it's been holding up so far.
Right, and that's the thing. It didn't hold up great. Florida State League's tough from a heat standpoint. You can wear you down. It can wear anybody down, but especially a reliever converting to starting. Then you throw on top of it that he knows – and the catcher knows, and the pitching coach knows, and whatever he wants, he's got that slider, which can make things easier, but also precludes the fastball command you need to have a starter. It's not, you don't have to rely on that when you're a reliever. And then the other pitches, the curveball and the changeup, just aren't consistent. So, I mean, that push-pull, JJ, you write about pitching a lot. What's the ratio in your mind of the converted closer to starter conversions? 10%? 15?
It doesn't. I mean, it's hard to think of the guys. A lot of the guys who you even think of as, I mean, one example that just jumped to mind is Michael Lorenzen. Who,
right. The Reds have done a couple.
And he did it. And then it sounds like the plan now is, hey, Michael Lorenzen's a reliever.
Right.
And that happens a lot. And I think if we went around this table, if you asked me and you said, you've got to tell me, do you think he's a starter or reliever long term? I know Jay's a reliever.
Right.
I think you're going to say the same
thing. Absolutely. I mean, I think he is the, if you're looking around the minor leagues for guys who could be, could approximate what Andrew Miller did in the postseason, I don't think Tyler Jay could be that good because he's not 6'7", he doesn't have that angle, but he could be close. He's pretty good. That slider that he throws, and he's a freak athlete. I mean, he was so explosive that summer for a college national team. Again, just he had a little presence to him. He looked bigger on the mound than his physical stature because he did have some swagger. Yeah. But I still, I think push comes to shove. I think he's a reliever, where Steven Gonsalves is one of those guys. I mean, Mike, you put a 50 medium on him as a grade. I think that's a good grade for him.
Yeah.
He's really weird. I don't know how else to say it. He has a very weird profile where it's a 90-mile-an-hour fastball and guys just don't hit it. That would have been awesome 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Today, he just seems like he's a out-of-place pitcher, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, he's another difficult guy to rank, you know, the number two prospect here, you know, in their top 10. But, you know, he's a guy who's safer to start than a Tyler Jay. You know, you could visualize him more in a rotation just given his profile and his stuff. But, you know, he's not going to be a number one, number two kind of starter. He's going to be more mid to back end kind of starter.
He's almost like a Twins classic. Doesn't throw hard. But the thing is, he doesn't throw as many strikes either.
Yeah.
I mean, and I like Steven Gonsalves.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I like him. But
he did have an issue with walks this year, especially once he moved up to double A. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if I asked you, though, to close your eye, and you're right, you can talk to guys who really like Steven Gonsalves, but if I took a name away from it, I hate to be kind of I'm just like the
Debbie Downer
skeptic,
here.
Debbie Downer here. But it really is. Like, if I said, I'm going to describe to you a prospect, okay, well, how hard does he throw? Well, you'll see some 90s.
Yeah.
And it's like 9-0, right? And you're not talking about 94, 9. No, you'll see some, you know, you'll see 90, 91.
Right.
Probably sits more 88, 89, you know.
I'm trying to think of, like, who he's like in the big leagues. I know he has the low arm slot. He has some physical and delivery comparisons to Bumgarner, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Tall, kind of broad-shouldered, 6'5", low slot, fastball's hard to pick up. Honestly, who he's like? He's like a left-handed Phil Bickford. That's who he is. He was suspended for for using marijuana in high school at Cathedral Catholic. Now, to his credit, he hasn't repeated the process as Mr. Bickford has throughout his pro career.
He's doing it at about 2 to 3 miles an hour left, but you got to run
less when Bickford's at his best. But in the futures game, Bickford was 89-90.
Yeah.
And both of them have like secondary stuff where you're kind of like, oh, I wish it was better. So this guy's left hand. So that as prospects go, I would prefer Gonsalves to Bickford, I think. But neither one of them is a top 50 guy, and they're both back of the top 100 if they're in it.
Yeah.
And he's the safer guy. Who, if you had to pick somebody in that top 10 who you really do like, who has upside for Twins fans, you could pick Nick Gordon if you want to, but who's got upside in your mind? in their top 10.
The guy that stood out to me and the guy that people within the organization seemed excited about was Fernando Romero.
Right.
A guy who last year was number 29, jumps up to number 4 this year.
Which is pretty good that he was even in the list last year. Mike Giardino did the list last year. And yeah. He barely pitched in a year and a half, so it's pretty good that Mike ranked him at all.
Yeah, he had Tommy John, but, you know, he was healthy this year. You know, a guy who's touching the upper 90s with a really good breaking ball and, you know, a chance to start. We'll see if he sticks as a starter or not. You know, he's someone who, you know, you could see in the big league sooner than later as a reliever type if they need help up there. But, right. You know, he's a guy who, you know, I think has a little bit more upside just given the stuff and looking at the numbers this year and the performance. I mean, he didn't walk that many guys. It was a good strikeout-to-walk ratio and, you know, someone that you can maybe dream on a little bit.
He does seem like he's got that. I mean, he's the only 60 in the top 30 on the BA grades, along with Alex Kirilloff. Those are the only two 60s.
Yeah.
So they're an organization, and they're close enough to Canada, I can say, organization. They really they need pitching so badly. Those guys, that's why I kind of bear down on those guys. And I know, JJ, you ranked Adalberto Mejia last year. I mean, that's another kind of classic twin, right? Like a low ceiling, strike throwing. Isn't that what they think of him, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, he's someone who's going to compete probably for, you know, the number 5 spot in the rotation out of spring training. And, yeah, throw strikes.
He's more conventional, though, as a prospect than Gonsalves.
Yes.
Like,
for,
because
for,
when
for
you
better
talk,
or for worse.
You know, when you talk about him, I mean, he is he's an innings and he back of the, you know, rotation kind of guy. And, I mean,
I don't even know what I'm laughing at now. Probably some bad joke.
But at the same time, you do see more velo from him than you do from Gonsalves. You do see, at times, probably even better secondary pitches. The fastball doesn't play better.
That's the thing, is that Gonsalves' fastball plays so well.
Yeah.
Mejia's, you know, it's fine. Right. Is that, he just doesn't excel at anything.
Right.
He's never going to strike out 12 per 9 like Gonsalves has. Through close to his whole minor league career. And the most vexing guy out of all these guys is Cole Stewart.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I mean, what do you make of Cole? Well, I mean, like, I know you've had a lot of guys inside the organization and some outside as well. And our internal notes were very mixed on him. I mean, what was it, four strikeouts per 9 in double A, something like that?
It wasn't very good. Yeah, it was 4.6. Yeah, which is not what you want. And, I mean, that's been an issue for him his entire pro career to this point, is not striking out enough guys and not missing enough bats. And you talk to guys within the organization, and they say it's just, you know, he's still learning how to pitch. He's still relatively new to pitching as a, you know, a two-sport guy coming into it. And he's still trying to learn how to use his stuff, and they still believe in his stuff. But, you know, at some point, the results have to, you know, have to show up, have to match the stuff, and so far it hasn't.
I'm gonna give ourselves one little shout out here. You know, we haven't ranked him in the top 100 since his draft year. So his 4th overall pick in the draft. The next year, BA top 100. He came out 52. We haven't ranked him since then. So the reputation has only held, but so far for him. But
do you remember he didn't make the Midwest League top 20 that year? That he, because I mean, you just couldn't find. He was vanilla as vanilla gets.
That's basically the word for him, is that, and he is not a vanilla kind of guy. I've gone on his Twitter. There ain't nothing vanilla about his Twitter. He's like a rootin' tootin' Texas A&M Aggie, Texan quarterback. All the like stereotypes you picture for a guy like that, he fits them. He checks all those boxes. And yet, he doesn't pitch like that. He pitches like a, you know who he reminds me of also, JJ's Taylor Guerrero. The other guy was a big-time high school guy. Yeah. Now, Guerrero had Tommy John, but he's wound up being like a sinker, slider, ground ball guy. Isn't that kind of what Cole Stewart is?
Yeah, I mean, he's been throwing the two-seamer a lot more, sitting more low 90s. I mean, he can touch. He can still rear back and touch, you know, 95, 96 with a four-seamer, but you're seeing mostly two-seamers and sliders.
Like a 91,
yeah,
91, 91, 92 two-seamers.
He has not demonstrated when he rears back that he can locate it.
Yeah.
Right.
So he doesn't have an effective 94. He has effectively 90, 91, 92 because, again, it's really hard to find guys.
He's in like one of your least favorite pitching prospects, isn't he? Cole Stewart?
Yes, there's nothing personal against him.
Right.
It's really hard to find a guy who combines. Trey Ball's another guy who you talk about.
Correct.
Top
picks. That's where I'm going. Like, these are not guys that JJ knows personally, nor does he troll their Twitter feeds. I promise you.
But Trey Ball, Cole Stewart. When you talk to guys who've seen him as pros, this is the amateur-pro divide. When you talk to guys who just see him, the pro scouts who just see him, outside the organization, they often ask the question, it's like, what was it? Right. Hey, you do, you, I'm talking to you, and you do amateur stuff too.
Right.
What was it about this guy that stood out when he was an amateur? And
hey, I just got done reading my high school report to Hudson Belinsky about Buster Posey coming out of high school as a pitcher and how geeked I was for Buster Posey out of high school. I just wanted that guy to pitch so bad. He just sounded so good. So the reports we have out of high school on Cole Stewart are like, you know, better present stuff than Jameson Taillon did when he went number two overall in 2010. From 89-93 last summer to 91-96 for much of the spring. Those velocity tails off at times in the later innings. There's a red flag. Life and command on his heater make it even more dominant. His best offering is a power mid-80 slider with tilt. Clean delivery. Should get even better once he concentrates solely on baseball. That's never happened, for
and
sure,
that's
stuff-wise.
But that is also, that is the thing. And I think we write it less now because what we have come to more and more realize is that for all the talk of here's how a guy can get better as a pro, that other step is you're going to throw every fifth day.
Right.
And it is really hard to throw every fifth day compared to every seventh.
Did it come up at all? He's a type 1 diabetic, we wrote in our high school report. Does that ever come up at all? Because I can't remember that coming up at all on any of the pro calls I've made or talking to Twins personnel.
Yeah, no one brought that up as any sort of reason why, you know, he's been struggling or anything like that. It's not something that came up with him. It's just, you know, from the Twin standpoint, from the people I talked to within the organization, you know, they insist it's just a learning how to pitch kind of deal. But
it's more raw than you would expect a high school kid from Texas to be, basically.
So. But the tough thing with that is that guys can learn to do a lot of things, but you very rarely, again, you can develop another pitch, but guys very rarely go from you don't miss bats to you miss bats.
That's correct. That's been my experience. That has been the Twins' experience. The guys who didn't miss bats for them in the minor leagues didn't miss bats for them in the big leagues. And that kind of led them down
and
a different road.
Then there's Gino Berrios, who misses bats in the minors. And I'm sorry to keep bringing it up.
Yeah, no.
He baffles me. He baffles me because he had such – not that you talked to scouts who thought that he was going to be a number one or anything like that.
Right.
But there's such a track record.
We always hedged our bets on him as more like a number three, even though he dominated the minor leagues. Now – I've seen the Twins blogosphere, which I used to write Twins top 10s and top 30s every year, and they have a very active blogosphere, and it's a pretty good blogosphere as well. And one of the things I saw during the year was J.O. Berrios was tipping his pitches, because some Twins bloggers picked up on this very quickly, that he would tip, especially when the changeup was coming. So he didn't locate the fastball very well, and then the changeup was just not nearly as effective in pro ball because he was tipping it. So, is there a guy deeper down, a pitcher deeper down, Mike, who they have some hope for? Is there a guy who has a chance to break out and be a starter? We did wind up ranking their Rule 5 pick. I know you probably didn't talk to anyone about Justin Haley because you already washed your hands of it. It does feel like they're mostly relievers after that clutch of top guys who are potential starters.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because, I mean, you look at a guy, for instance, number 19, Lewis Thorpe, a left-hander, a guy that they had high hopes for when they signed him, and he hasn't pitched in 2 years. A guy who has the makings of a, you know, maybe number two or number three kind of starter, a left-hander with good stuff, but, you know, he's someone who they still have high hopes for, but at some point he has to get on a mound and actually pitch and perform.
The Australia track record, just not good.
Yeah.
It just is what it is. No offense to Australia, but the track record really isn't that good. I like the guys you have, and not to give away the whole list, but the guys you have ahead of him who are hitters, I like better. Zach Granite, Mitch Garver, even Akil Baddoo.
Yeah.
If you look at the strength of the organization, to me the strength is they do have some depth of hitters. I just wish, I like Griffin Jacks. That's another pitcher they drafted.
Yeah, I was going to bring him up after.
He's just a tough case because he went back to school this fall, right? Didn't go to Instructional League, and he's committed to the Air Force through, what, April? May?
Yeah, I think they'll have him probably around May or June is probably when they'll have him finally next year. And
he does sound exciting, though, and the Air Force has produced some interesting prospects of late. You know, the program's taken a big step forward.
I know they were thrilled to get him where they got him.
You
know, he was high on their board in terms of talent, but fell, obviously, just because of all the, you know, external things with him. But, you know, he's certainly interesting. I mean, he has good stuff, and he's someone who has a chance to start potentially. I know he's someone that they hope could start for him, and someone who could be a quick mover in the system potentially.
He's physical, and at times he shows you two above average, the fastball and the breaking ball have both been above average. JJ, question for you: how good was his dad, Garth Jax? Was his dad pretty good? He was a Cowboys linebacker, right?
No, I'm sorry, but yeah, he was not. When I think of Cowboys linebackers, I can.
He was no Brian Brunig.
I could go. You know, he's not
Hollywood Henderson.
Yeah, Hollywood was really good. I you know, there are very few players who can succeed while snorting cocaine on the field.
This is our most
is in a squeeze bottle.
This is our strangest podcast in a long time. It really is. I mean, I've been looping.
Refreshed by
I guess so. I'm getting ready to be gone for a couple of weeks. So Garth Jackson, 1986 to 95, according to Pro Football Reference.
Yeah.
I don't think that was a very big part of your
career. A friend of mine happened to run into Garth Jax in an airport. He said, yeah, I talked to a dad of an Air Force pitcher who just got drafted, and it was like,
Garth Jax. He had two kick returns in 1990 for the Phoenix Cardinals for 17 yards. So that would be in the triviality portion of the report. But it's really like, this seems like it's more of a position player. You can have more confidence in the hitters in the system than the pitchers. That's how I felt about it.
Yeah, you could say that for sure. It's not a lot of up the middle kind of talent, though. It's mostly
don't get too excited.
Yeah, so don't get too excited. But
that's the theme of this podcast.
let's really talk about the up the middle. We haven't really talked about Nick Gordon, and he's number one on this for a reason. I mean, he is not the flashiest prospect by any stretch of the imagination. If you don't pay a whole lot of attention to this and you just listen to the podcast anyway, which thank you for listening, you may think, hey, D. Gordon, you know, Nick Gordon is going to be this absolutely fast twitch, you know, leadoff hitter type. And that's not Nick Gordon. Nick Gordon is a very well-rounded player who lacks 60s and 70s on the card, scouting card.
Yeah, I mean, he's the unflashy Gordon. He's not Flash Gordon, you know?
That would be a great nickname, Unflash.
Yeah, he's the Unflash. It. Yeah, I'm sure he'd really like that. Yeah, he's turned his flash off. But, yeah, he really, outside of his arm strength, that's really his only plus tool. I mean, there's really, like you said, I mean, there's nothing about him that is flashy. I mean, it's just...
But there's a lot of 50s there, too.
Yeah. I mean, he has the, you know, everyone I've talked to and all the feedback I've gotten, I mean, certainly has a strong chance to stick at shortstop and play there. And, you know, a guy who works hard at it and makes the routine plays, and as long as he focuses on positioning and learning hitters and all of that, he should have no problem sticking there, and, you know, has the chance to hit and a left-handed hitter and, you know, impact the ball and be a solid regular, you know, at the big league level. But, yeah, I mean, even still a number one prospect, it's still not a, you know, a slam dunk, sure thing, superstar type.
It's not loud tools, and I've had this interaction on Twitter with a couple of Twins fans, and I want to be clear about this. Especially if you're a subscriber to Baseball America, if you go read his high school report, it's not that unchanged from his pro report. He hasn't lost athleticism. I mean,
that was a misconception that was out there at the time.
That's exactly right, and he is. That's why you got into it with the D. Gordon stuff. He is not. His brother was a basketball player who hardly played any college baseball. And what was it? Some Division II school in the middle of Florida, but it wasn't Florida Southern, I don't think. Maybe it was. But when his brother was a fifth-round pick, that was a surprise. That was seen as like a real stunner by the Dodgers. Don't forget, that was when the Dodgers were in their super cheap phase. I know it's hard to imagine super cheap at Dodgers right now, but they were. So that was like a stroke of genius scouting by the Dodgers. But what we wrote about Nick, above-average hitter with loose, quick stroke, strong bat-to-ball skills, more doubles power. Presently, scouts believe he could have at least average power down the road, maybe even above average. I remember talking to a national cross-checker that year who was convicted this guy was going to be a 15 to 20 home run guy as a shortstop. Best arm in the high school class, but opinions on his defense differed. Average to well above average, soft hands, you know, average runner out of the box. But this is the line. Scouts have conviction about Gordon's makeup, among the best in the draft, and say he has top-of-the-charts instincts. He's always been an instincts guy who will get the most out of his tools, not a toolsy guy who, like, you know, he's a savvy player. I think that gets undersold. I don't know why. I mean, he's a son of a big leaguer who played in the big leagues for like 20 years.
Yeah.
I mean, how would you not be savvy growing up around Tom Gordon? So
yeah.
I think that part of his game gets undersold, but it's also hard to quantify, you know, in a report.
Yeah, no, it certainly is. But that is something that, you know, everyone in the Twins organization brought up with him, just the work ethic there with him and just the feel for the game and the aptitude that he has for it. You know, it is there. And just like you said, being the son of a big leaguer.
He's a high floor guy.
Yeah,
I agree. And it didn't hurt that he went to the fall league and hit. And I mean, it's a very small sample size, but one of the things he went to the fall league to go do is you got to face more left-handed bats. He did not hit left-handers in the regular season. It was only 22 at bats, but he did hit them in the fall league.
Yeah.
So all you're looking for there is a little progress. I don't think the stats tell you much, but he performed a little better in the small sample there. But that's kind of like the next step for him next year, right? Is hitting lefties better and I guess trying to start with a little bit more power as he goes down the line. So I like Nick Gordon, but he is not at this list. Like these shortstops we talk about when we're meeting on top 100 guys, like Willy Adames of the Rays,
Gleyber
Torres,
James Crawford.
Yeah.
Dansby Swanson.
There's
a lot of shortstops at the top of our list. He's not one of those.
He's in the next tier of shortstops.
He's two tiers down, to be honest.
You don't think he's in the next tier?
If he is, he's at the near the bottom of that tier. And again, that's nothing against him, but Nick Gordon is not a top 25 and probably at this point not a top 50 prospect, I would argue. 50 is about the cusp, I'd say.
I think I put him right at the back of my 50 in the handbook. You know, like he's not the ceiling guy, but like he's better than say Ryan Mountcastle.
Yes.
You know,
well, yes,
that's kind of damning him.
Yes.
That's damning him with faint praise. That's pretty faint.
We can do better than that. He is not only better than Ryan Mountcastle,
but he's not as good as Brendan Rodgers.
No,
he's
and Brendan Rodgers is in that second tier to me. He's not in the first tier yet. He has to have another year of doing it.
I don't know. You did Brendan Rodgers last year. Shortstop this year with 200 isolated power in the South Atlantic League. I know it's Asheville, but we don't have middle infielders who do that there very often. I don't think so. You did Rodgers last year. You did Nick Gordon this year. If you had to take one, gun to your head, which one are you taking?
I would take Rodgers for the upside.
I agree completely on that. I'm just saying he's not. I'm saying he's above Nick. Nick Gordon is behind him, but I'm saying Brendan Rodgers isn't in the first tier.
He's probably
talking Gleyber and the
Ahmed Rosario,
right.
Those kind of jokers. Yeah, I think that's right. pick a hitter that you like in the rest of the system, so we can say some positive things about Twins prospects.
All right, let's try to say some positive things. Well, I mean, people really like, you know, Kirilloff and his hitting ability. You know, he's number three on this list for a reason.
Yeah, I do like Alex Kirilloff. Internally, they comp him
to Max Kepler.
Max Kepler.
Yeah.
That's kind of weird, isn't it? I mean, maybe they know Max Kepler very well by now, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, they envision him as a guy who's going to hit for some power at the big league level. You know, a corner outfielder, potentially a first baseman, a guy who has first base experience and handles himself well there.
The power comes
but,
in, definitely they could move him
yeah.
to that spot. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, you're just kind of banking on the power and just the left-handed hitting ability. And, you know, he had a great debut. You know, in the Abbey League, he was
that didn't hurt.
Yeah,
and that's their advanced. They have a Gulf Coast League team. That's their advanced level. So even though it's rookie ball,
yeah,
it was actually a fairly aggressive move considering he's a Northeast kid, and they did not send him to their lowest level team. So I think that gives you an indication of just how highly the Twins view Alex Kirilloff. And if you had ranked him first, that wouldn't have surprised me. That wouldn't have blown me away.
Yeah,
I mean, he was a preseason first team All-American in high school, and then he had a significantly, just a really loud high school season. So he's pretty interesting. But the next position player after Gordon and Kirilloff is like found money for them. Daniel Palka.
Yeah,
he's just a weird prospect too. Just a strange profile, right? I mean,
yeah.
You saw him a lot in college. In the ACC, covering a lot of ACC college baseball.
Yeah.
Did you think to yourself, Daniel Palka, I can see this guy's a big leaguer when you watched him. Didn't he, correct me if I'm wrong, he wore really tight pants at Georgia Tech. He was like the Jimmy Fallon skit with his tight pants.
That's a little bit of a deep cut for me. I don't know. I never really noticed the pants.
He stood out to me for his
tight pants. To be perfectly honest. But
see, this is the curse of having been at Baseball America so long. People in the ACC used to love to make fun of Miami for their tight pants.
Yeah,
the players from the U were all about their tight pants, and so I've kind of noticed the pants over the years. So I'll stop digging. Let's talk about what Daniel Palka does well.
Yeah, well, you know, I really don't know about the pants, but yeah, I mean, home runs is definitely, I mean, we looked it up. It was what, the last 2 years. He's led all of minors and with
That's
home
it.
Runs. And yeah. I mean, he made Adam Brett Walker expendable. Is basically what happened. He came in and they were done with Adam Brett Walker.
200 strikeouts 1 year, fool me once. 200 strikeouts twice?
Yeah.
Fool me again. We'll be fooled again. Sorry.
And then, I mean, the thing is Palka strikes out a lot too. You know,
yeah,
it's
only 186.
It's, yeah, I mean, it's not that much of an upgrade, but.
I've lost containment on this podcast.
The thing with Palka is he's going to play slightly better defense.
He can throw.
And he can throw.
This is crazy. This is their top 10. These are the right guys.
Yeah. You know, and he does have a lot of power, you know, and that power should play. You know, it's just a matter of if he's going to make enough contact and not swing and miss too much.
That's a tough. That's tough. I mean, again, you hate to, but this is why all these guys we said, there's warts. In his case, the ward is one that we've seen many a guy fail to put it together because of.
Yeah.
And that's a concern.
And, you know, they sent him to Escajito for winter ball. He played like a month in the Dominican League. Hit a couple home runs, 30 strikeouts and 80 at-bats. So yeah. Daniel Palka, same as it ever was in the Dominican League. I think the point is, I think Daniel Palka can be a second division regular kind of player. That's the grade we put on him.
Yeah.
But he is not ready to do that, even for a second division team, I don't think, in 2017. I think he needs some more AAA time. But that's the kind of guy, JJ, you wrote about this in the past. I mean, I don't know if he's got 80 power, but he's clearly got close to 70 power. You know, this is the kind of guy who, even if it's a 40-hit tool, you keep giving him a chance. I mean, is there a chance this could be one of those guys, like a Mark Trumbo, like these other guys that you wrote about, who need longer to develop the field of hit?
Right, and the tough thing about that is that a lot of these guys, at some point, you have to decide, are you willing to give them 500 at-bats at the big league level? And that's tough to do. Now, in some ways, you could argue that the Twins are in a better position to do that than a lot of teams.
Right.
At the same time, when you talk about the success stories in this, like when we talk about Chris Davis, and Chris Davis, to me, is as much of a success story of the extreme contact issues / power but with great powers you're going to get. But one of the things that happened for Chris Davis was he got a whole lot of at-bats to get to that point.
Right. Now,
and even then, it still wasn't team one that is where he succeeded. Yeah. It was down the road. We talked about Adam Brett Walker. I do think that if you put Adam Brett Walker in the big leagues for 500 at-bats, by the end of those 500 at-bats, there's at least this chance that he's made himself into a 200. We're not talking 240. He's a 200, 220 hitter who's hitting enough homers for you that there's some value there.
Yeah.
But Chris Carter was a guy, again, when we talk about these kind of guys, when we talk about the success stories.
Right.
Chris Carter is a success story who keeps getting
DFA'd.
Right.
After leading the league in home runs. This is the genre of player that Daniel Palka is. And now the thing is that the Twins have players with lower ceilings but more polished hit tools. They have like three anti-Palkas. But I think Luis Arraez is like the most anti-Daniel Palka that could almost possibly exist. But not quite, though, because it's not like he's some defensive whiz either.
Yeah.
I mean, like, all he does is hit. Well, like every single day.
Well, first of all, he wears his pants really loose. They're really loose pants. So that's the first way that he's really not
well
like Palka.
Well played, young man. Well played.
But yeah, no, he's tiny. He's not. He's 5'10", 180. And he's not a defensive whiz, like you said. I mean, he's a fringy defender with a fringy arm. He's a below average runner. I mean, really, all the tools, the power's not there. Really, the only tool he has is the hit tool.
They're killing these guys. But it's.
It's the
this
truth.
This is the bottom 10 farm system. Believe me, there's worse to come. Just wait till the Angels podcast. We're going to sink our teeth into that one. And by the way, one kudo I want to give to the Twins, there's no organization that does instructional league rosters like the Twins. Because nobody gives you the precise height and weight like the Minnesota Twins. Luis Arraez checked in at 5'10", 184.
He did.
So it's like 14 pounds lighter than Trey Cabbage.
Well,
I love the fact they have Arias, Blankenhorn, and Cabbage. But easy as ABC and 1-2-3.
The thing that does stand out with this is, and I think I said this before we started the podcast, which is no rebuilding team is more dependent on guys who are already no longer prospect eligible than the Twins. If the Twins are going to be good in the not just near,
but 18, 19.
In the 18, 19, 20 window, it is going to be because Max Kepler, Byron Buxton, Miguel Sano, Eddie Rosario,
Jorge Polanco.
Those guys have to be the guys who succeed. And the reality of it is that...
Maybe Kenneth Vargas is part of that? I mean, I don't know. He's 25.
And then they're going to have to find pitching somewhere. It's a tough... It is.
You don't think it's going to be Tyler Duffy, Tommy Malone, Ricky Nolasco? Oh, they traded to Ricky Nolasco.
But
Hector Santiago?
But that's
their future rotation stalwarts?
Again, I do look at it. The tough thing that they have, you compare them to, say, like the White Sox. The White Sox are rebuilding... But the White Sox rebuilding plan is in the very interesting kind of early stages where you can...
They've committed to it.
But is the Twins are stuck in a rebuild where... I know it's a new regime and there's a lot they can do, you would say, in some ways. But at the same time, this isn't a team that has a lot that they can do. They're kind of locked into who they are. I mean, this is... You're not trading Miguel Sano to try to rebuild. You can't trade Joe Mauer. Joe Mauer's...
They have one asset they've considered trading this offseason, Brian Dozier.
Yeah.
And they should.
And they should definitely look into trading him.
Right. If you can get the right deal, a guy of that value, whose best years are going to be before you're probably good again, it makes a lot of sense to try to get something good for him now.
And you have Luis Arias knocking on the door.
That's right. So. Don't forget Travis Blankenhorn. He could wind up at second base too.
Right.
Where's Trey Cabbage playing these days? I don't know. I just like saying Trey Cabbage.
It's a fun name to say.
It is.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the guys, like their feel-good stories, you have them clustered together. The Akil Baddoo, Mitch Garver, Zach Granite. That's the one, those are the guys who, good things about those guys. Like, yeah. Akil Baddoo sounds really interesting, like better and almost already a different player than they thought they drafted, right?
Yeah, they've been really excited about his progress and quick progress. I mean, he added some weight. He had some muscle to his frame. He's already started, you know, developing physically. He grew
6'1", 209
inches. Yeah, he's grown a couple of inches. And, you know, he's a guy who, you know, they took him. They looked at him as a speedy center fielder type, you know, a top-of-the-order type of hitter. And now, you know, potentially, you know, he's someone who could develop a little bit more power than they expected. A guy who, you know, maybe at some point has to move off his center field and move into a corner, but, you know, could develop the type of power that could play there. You know, he's a guy who has some tools, who has some ability to hit. You know, there's some rawness there. He didn't have a great debut, you know, statistically, but, you know, they're certainly excited about him, you know, given just the physical gains he already made in just a really quick span of time.
I just remember reading your report and thinking, man, if this guy had done a little bit better in his debut, I would have run him in the top 10. Yeah. I would have, like, stuck him in there just as a 55 extreme flyer, because you're just looking, because he's listed 5'11", 185 in the MLB Advanced Media, you know, official roster, but the Instructs roster, which I'm going to swear by for the Twins, I'll give them kudos. They, you know, he has grown, and then Granite and Garver were two guys at the Double A level who really took strides forward. And I guess Garver pretty much made Stuart Turner expendable, and they lost him in the Rule 5 draft. But Garver was already ahead. You know, before they decided on the 40-man roster, right?
Yeah, I mean, Garver was like the Palka to Turner's, you know, Adam Brett Walker. I mean, he was basically, I mean, because...
That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, Stuart Turner and Mitch Garver, you look at the two of them, Turner was a defensive-first kind of guy who, you know, the bat is a question mark. You're probably not going to hit all that much in the big league level, whereas Mitch Garver is a guy who's always had more potential at the bat, you know, always has shown at least a chance to hit for, you know, solidly for a catcher, you know, at the big league level. New Mexico guy. You know, there were some doubts coming in just because of the environment he was hitting in, might have elevated his stats a little bit, but he's continued to hit, you know, so far. I mean, it's not going to, you know, be middle of the order type production, but the big strides that he's made have been defensively. You know, he's really done a much better job as far as just blocking and throwing and, you know, improving his release and the quickness there. And he, you know, he threw out an organization best number of, you know, base stealers. And, you know, he really just closed the defensive gap between himself and Stuart Turner enough that they felt okay, you know, not protecting Turner.
They've had an interesting recent history with catchers, too. They spent some money this year in the draft on Ben Wartfeld. JJ, you did some research on that as well. I mean, like, their draft was interesting. It's almost like, you know, part of you would say, well, they just graduated all these players, the big leagues. Maybe they should have drafted a little bit more college-heavy to try to move some guys quicker. They had done that in the past, but this year was high school, and they wanted to refill their lower levels. So it was Kirilloff, Roorvelt, Jose Miranda, Badu. They gave a decent amount of money to Jordan. Is it Balazovic?
Yeah.
Balazovic. Balazovic, the kid out of Ontario.
They like him. They think he has starting potential.
Yeah, they gave him more than $500,000. The same thing with Tyler Benninghoff out of Kansas City. No. So they went aggressive on a couple of high school arms. The first college guy who's there close to the majors guy is Thomas Hackamer. Because Griffin Jacks isn't even with them. He's back in Air Force.
It's so hard to be that close to the majors that quick when you
when you're
on a slope track.
Yeah. So Thomas Hackamer, good story there at St. John's that Coach Eddie Blanks told me at Blankmeyer about how they converted Thomas Hackamer to going sidearm like Mitchell Cranston. What was his nickname? The Sheriff?
El Gaucho.
Oh, El Gaucho. Much better than the Sheriff. El Gaucho, Mitchell Cranston for Cal. They went heavy at Cal. Again, they've done this a few times. Alex Schick, who that was kind of a big loss for Cal. Wasn't he like a hurt knee during the year?
Yeah, they were missing him. He was going to be their closer.
Right.
And he didn't come back until late in the year.
Nothing went right for Cal this year.
No,
very
not
little.
Not one thing.
Yeah.
Last year now.
2015, everything came up Bears.
Yeah.
It was an interesting draft class for me. They actually even took Ryan Mason in the 13th round. They really went heavy with Cal Bears.
They did, yeah.
Another one of their college guys that I like, not from this year's draft, but Lamont Wade.
Yeah.
At some point, Mike, I guess I'm wondering, like, did you think he would factor up higher on their list, or is he just too obviously a tweener, I guess? You wound up with him in the 20s.
Yeah.
He just seems like he's performed, and again, I don't think you were at that super region or that regional, but like,
I was watching it.
UCLA that weekend for Maryland. I mean, he was like the best player on the field.
Yeah, that was like his coming out party.
Yeah,
and that
was a total tour de force.
Yeah, no, I remember that, and I touched on that a little bit, you know, in the write up. He's a guy who, I mean, he has a feel for hitting, and you know, depending on who you talk to, I mean, he is a guy I struggled with ranking. I mean, I had him higher in different versions of this list. I went through, you know, a million different versions as we all do, I think. But
sure.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely got a feel for hitting. It's just the questions with him, you know, or, you know, he's probably going to be a left fielder. He's probably going to be a corner outfielder or a fourth outfielder kind of type. You know, how much power is he going to develop?
Right.
You know, that's the big question with him, too. Is he going to have enough power to be a regular in the corner, you know, in the corner outfield? Some people think he will have enough. Some people are a little lukewarm on that. So that's really, for me, what kind of held him back. You know, like you said, he's kind of an in-betweener, you know, so... He's an interesting guy, certainly, if he puts it all together, and you know, people love his makeup and his work ethic, and you know, he does, you know, have a good feel for the strike zone and, you know, ability to make contact, but it's just a matter of, you know, how much he's going to be able to impact the ball.
If you squint at him, JJ, I think if you squint and you look at Lamont Wade, there are some shades of Michael Brantley there.
I've always liked Lamont Wade because
like a poor man's Michael Brantley.
Right. And again, that doesn't mean he's going to produce like Michael Brantley's produced. Because
but
Michael
he controls
Brantley,
the strike zone, and he's like this tweener kind of thing.
He hits.
Right.
I mean, really, what it comes down to is he hits. And is he? Do you want him in center field? No. But it's not like you say there's zero chance that he could ever play a game in center field.
Right.
And yeah, most of those guys end up being guys who it ends up not working out for him. But
right.
It really comes down to, part of it is how high can he get his defense in center field?
He doesn't really have to. And the thing is, with the Twins, who cares? He's not going to outrun Byron Buxton. It's just not going to happen. If things work out the way the Twins want, they're set in right field with Kepler and center field with Buxton. They need to find a running mate for those guys. And it might be Eddie Rosario. But here's a guy who does all the things that Rosario doesn't do, like
they're
come to play every day and draw a walk.
They're the flip side of each other in many ways.
Yes.
Because, I mean, again, Eddie Rosario should be a better defender, but it's not necessarily always there.
Correct. and then there's my personal cheese ball, and I understand why you didn't end up ranking him because he strikes out a lot, but Jalen Davis has special. He's got some thunder in his hands.
Yeah, I mean, he had an impressive debut. I think it was something, you know, 16 home runs in 64 games or something like that. Yeah, and because he had missed time, you know, when he was drafted, he had a knee injury, I believe.
And he had
was
a shoulder, too. I think he had two, but I know he had a – it was significant his draft year.
Yeah, and so he wasn't able to debut until this year, and you know he made an impact obviously with the power, but yeah, I mean again the strikeouts with him are you know the question the swing and miss. Yeah,
255 combined, 255, 341, 523 slash line combined, but 87 strikeouts and 239 at bats for a 22-year-old in low A and rookie ball, so concerning.
But, there are concerns there,
but there's power there. So,
yeah.
Do you have a personal cheese ball that either on or off this 30 that we haven't mentioned? We've fired a lot of names at you, I know.
Yeah,
we grilled you.
I was gonna say, do you have a personal cheese ball other than the 22 guys that we've already asked you about?
This is a rapid fire Twins foo though. I like talking Twins.
Yeah, I mean, I think we touched on most of my cheese balls. You know, the one guy that I would say is probably, you know, a Twins personal cheese ball within the organization is Trevor Hildenberger.
Okay.
A reliever. Name. Yeah, another great name, you know, along with Blankenhorn. you know, he's a guy who, I mean, they have a lot of relievers in this top 30. They have a lot of relievers.
I was going to say, there's...
It's a lot of relievers.
Yeah. Just by sheer throwing numbers at it, they've got to end up with two or three guys who end up being useful relievers just because...
I didn't want to point that out. It just does not speak well of the organization. That's your depth spot. You know, unfortunately, that is what they've drafted.
Yeah. Well, so, it's, you know, the Pat Lights and Shaguas and Birdies of the world, all hard throwers. But
Jake Reed.
Hildenberger stands out just because it's kind of a different skill set with him. It's more of a lower slot, not quite sidearm, but it's a low slot, low 90s kind of guy with good sink, good secondary pitches, and a guy who just doesn't walk anybody.
Just kind of like Michael Tonkin, that they already have.
Yeah.
But by the time Michael Tonkin gets expensive... Trevor Hildenberger, oh, by the way, went to Cal.
Yeah.
So he checks every box.
The Cal train keeps on rolling.
Yeah, the long last name. He sounds vaguely Teutonic or Nordic. You know, perfect for the Twins. I mean, like, that's kind of how they roll. You know who my other guy I meant to ask you about, and I think I emailed you about him, was Tanner English.
Yeah.
Tanner English showed some flashes here. Finally, this guy was like a 13th round pick out of high school.
Yeah.
Didn't sign with the Rays. I always remember the first day of school that he was at South Carolina, passed uneventfully. The second day of school, he tweeted, "Man, I'm tired of school." And I just remember a scout with the Rays, I pointed that out to him and said, "I just want to let you know, he already regrets his decision." He said, "Oh, I saw that. I already saw that. We've already talked about it." So I've always had that in my head with Tanner English. Like, he should have signed out of high school.
Yeah.
But... you know, Grayson Griner, Joey Pancake, Tanner English, all three of these guys kind of went together to South Carolina. But a lot of those guys, Max Schrock came a year after them. Max Schrock had a great pro year this year. Grayson Griner bounced back, had a nice year, got in the handbook with the Tigers.
Yeah.
Tanner English didn't quite get in the handbook, but there's something there, isn't there?
Yeah, no, there are definitely tools there, and they really like his tools. You know, he's a guy, you know, he's a guy who could stick in center field. He's a legit center fielder, you know, a guy who's...
Royals should have drafted him. they like their true center fielders.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy who can run. He's a guy who can throw. And he has, you know, there's something there with the bat. He just hasn't put it together yet offensively.
His injury was this year, but I know he was banged up.
Yeah, he was a little banged up. I believe it was a foot injury with him. I don't have my notes in front of me right now, but I believe it was a foot injury with him. And, yeah, I mean, he's a guy whose tools, and you watch him play, and he's explosive. Explosive. Compare him to Lamont Wade. And Tanner English is the more explosive of the two, the guy who really stands out, you know. But he hasn't put them all together yet. He hasn't been able to, you know, hit consistently enough yet to be able to, you know, put those tools to use.
Got a little extra time in the fall league. Probably needed the at-bats. Got 71 more at-bats there. I don't know what to say. Like, I don't know when the Twins can be good again. But it feels like by the time they're good, Brian Dozier won't be there. Oh. They're going to have to, like, find some other pieces. Because this farm system in and of itself is not going to bring
them
back.
If you're trying to craft it, it's Miguel Sano, Byron Buxton, and up being stars.
Right. That's kind of where it has to come from.
Their bullpen could be pretty good.
That's right. They could become Brian Kinney's favorite team. They could be bullpenning. Just bullpen every day, all day. Throw at least one birdie at it. Maybe then go out and get the other one. No. Mike, you were a good sport because we threw a lot at you today. I was I don't know what got me. It was the Buster Posey High School pitching write up. That got me fired up before. I went through two different archives today. Also, BA archives always get you fired up. So. Now you're onto the college preview issue.
Yeah.
What is, just give that a little tease for people who are listening. What are some of the things people have to look forward to in our college preview issue at the end of the month?
Well, speaking of funky names, we're going to have a feature on Jake Berger, which will be exciting. Taking a look at, Alex Lang is someone that we want to touch on with LSU. A look at Stanford, obviously.
Alex Lang could be in the mix there to go 1-1 to the Twins. Twins pick 1-1. They already took one.
That is another part, but that's another part of the rebuilding of the Twins. Yeah. Is that they're going to pick high, and
they have two former scouting directors now on the staff, and that Daron Johnson and Darren Johnson and Mike Ratcliffe are not the scouting director, but they both have been the Twins scouting director, and they are both still in the front office. But now Sean Johnson takes over, West Coast Crosschecker, promoted scouting director. Great feature on him if you want to read about Sean in the Wichita Eagle over the holidays. Sean caught at Wichita State. I didn't know any of these things in this feature. I knew he played at Wichita State, but he was a catcher there, little used catcher, but still, like, even after being named scouting director, still went back and worked Brett Chemnitz's winter camps at Wichita State. So
I have to talk Wichita with him at some point,
Yeah, I mean, your wife's from...
I've spent many a day at Wichita State
campus. Yeah, so, I mean, this is... So, congratulations, you're our scouting director. Here, go, don't blow the first overall pick of the draft. With two dudes who've done your job over your shoulder. I mean, I know they're going to let him work because I know DJ and I know Ratcliffe, and they're great guys, but they got to get this right, don't they? I mean, they can't afford to mess this one up.
Yeah, I mean, this is a golden opportunity to, start to stock up that system as we're talking about. And, there is obviously some talent out there, ready for plucking. I mean, you talked about Alex Lang, you talked about, Fajito, a guy like Hunter Green.
You mentioned Stanford, Tristan Beck. I think he's that next tier, but it wouldn't shock either of us if Tristan Beck wound up on the Twins' radar at 1-1. So, and so you mentioned Stanford. You mentioned Alex Lang. Anything else that's on your agenda for the college preview issue? That's a pretty busy list already.
Yeah, obviously we're going to have all the top 25 previews and the conference previews and all of that to look forward to.
And JJ will geek out on the
small college preview.
So,
gotta say, it's been quite the coup the last couple of years for me to hand that off to JJ and to get him excited about that.
I play out my excitement because I know,
it does bring me pleasure.
It brings you pleasure, but I don't have to do that anymore. I'm glad that you don't do it anymore for your sake.
It's a good thing I don't have to do that anymore. But at the same time, it was always fun to find some of those guys. So, good luck on having some of these guys to write about next year, whether it's Jermaine Palacios. Or Wander Javier. Yeah. Looking forward to Wander Javier making his domestic debut. I'm sure so are the Twins. But they give him like $4 million?
Yeah, they give him a lot of money. So, I mean, he's still 17. It's going to be interesting to watch his progress over these next few years, the Wander years.
Most of these guys.
We got at least two Lanana puns on this podcast,
The over/under was four.
That's under the under still.
But most of these guys will be available for you to write about again next year.
Yeah, so we can just copy and paste.
Exactly. So for Mike Lanana and JJ Cooper, we will not copy and paste this podcast. The next one will be a little bit less loopy. Next podcast, American League West podcast, JJ, right? You're going to start plowing through the American League West? Look forward to it.
Well, I mean, you're going to be out of the office for the Angels podcast. I think that was by design.
That's unfortunate because I really would like to rain blows upon their farm system. So for JJ and Mike, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you on the next Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit BaseballAmerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.